I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Welcome to Free Good Friday, our weekly segment where we dive into the weird and wild news of the world of health. This week, what's a generation?
Ooh, yeah, brother.
P mystery solved, and I got a little history lesson for the boys. Let's go.
Whoa, I love history.
What's a generation?
Should let the music play out, but I kind of want to talk over the music a little bit because even though this artist, Rich, our best friend, has given us the rights to use this music, YouTube just seems to think that we don't have the rights. And technically, I guess
we don't.
Technically, we don't. Well, but we have the blessing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I was going to say it's more of a blessing than a right.
YouTube does not believe in blessings.
No, that's right.
I actually refuted or disputed, I guess, a couple of the copyright claims against us. And I just wrote, but he's our friend.
But he told me.
And hey, big shout out to all the folks that have followed. Was it Elena. Thank you.
Alina.
Fuck, man.
Whatever.
Now I'm all turned
Or Elena.
That really cool woman who left the comment that she thought that we were very, very good looking. I think that's all she said. Was like, you guys are hot on our YouTube. Some people followed suit the next week.
We doubled our audience.
That's it. Yeah. There was two people that chimed in.
It's a YouTube revolution.
So anyway, go on over to YouTube if you want to watch the episode. You can play it in the background while you're washing dishes or whatever.
It's still an exclusive club.
Yeah. You could also throw it on your phone and just put it on the dash of your car while you're driving. Easy to watch while you're driving.
Mm-hmm.
So
I do that when like big sporting events are on.
Sure.
Yeah. And we're really trying to increase watch time. So just let it run.
That's
like,
right.
Even if you're not really watching it.
Yeah.
Crash the car, just make sure that that you don't lock your phone and don't call the police. Let somebody else take care of that. Let the video run.
Yeah.
So, to the history lesson, we've done it a few times, but I really had a lot of fun doing it during the Gabor Mate live show in December, where during our opening segment where we warm up the audience, where 75% of them had no idea who the fuck we were because they were there to see their daddy, Canada's daddy, Daddy Mate. But we had a lot of fun with that history lesson, and I found another one. Actually, you inspired the next one, so thank you for that, Tay. But before we get into it, one little announcement. Folks, if you've been listening to the podcast since the inception, you know that the podcast has evolved. And these episodes, these Feel Good Friday episodes, if you aren't aware, are a byproduct of COVID. One of the positives that came from COVID. One of the good things that came out of that horrible time. And so we've been doing this segment, Feel Good Friday, for a little while, and today marks our 200th Feel Good Friday episode.
Wow, congrats, guys.
Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate it. Stop it.
And it's really amazing to do this in front of a live studio audience.
Shut up.
You're too. Thank you.
Damn. So congrats, guys, and thanks for tuning in for these 200 episodes. Hopefully this one will be a banger. Let's get into it. I found this to be very fascinating. I had no idea about this prior to reading this article. This was written by a woman named Jean Twenge. She's a PhD, a professor of psychology, and she specializes in generational research. So, and the
like sort of generational research, as in it takes a really like she's doing the same thing like.
No,
I
actually could have wrong what it is that her specialty is, but basically she focuses on like generations. So like we are the generation of millennials.
Right.
And so
the psychology of a particular generation.
Yeah. How like your what makes the generation a generation? What are the things that precede it that make them you know, what are the effects that make a generation a generation? Mm. Now, do you guys know how generations are named?
No.
So that's what we're going to get into here. And I'm quite surprised that
it seemed like it was going in a alphabetical. I've heard of Gen X, Gen Y, Gen Z.
Yep.
I know that we're millennials. I don't know if millennial is just a colloquial term or if we have a,
I love this. This is great. Donut, don't do that.
Was someone knocking on the door?
I don't know. Someone might be here. Come in.
One sec.
Come on in.
Could be.
Might be someone afraid of
dogs.
Come here, Donut. All right. We'll just cut this out. Jesus Christ. That fucking Can of Post guy started a goddamn group howl. Holy fuck.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
All right. Holy shit. It's been holy fuck. The whole office is going
every dog,
off. Maybe let's keep this.
Every dog in the building is sounding the alarm right now.
Hey, quiet, quiet. It's okay.
The mailman is here.
Quiet. Quiet. Good.
Good quiet.
Yeah, so, I don't know.
Are millennials Gen Y?
Sorry.
There we go. Aren't millennials Gen Y?
So here, how about this? Before we get into the name, the way that they are named, I'll lay out the generations so far.
Okay. Gen A, the original one was Jesus and his like homies.
Right.
Not quite. So
the disciples.
So the first generation the first generation name that ever came to be was from 1901. So 1901 to 1927. Do you guys know the first generation?
Nope.
So I don't know how I feel about this. I'm kind of like, why? It's called the greatest generation.
No.
So they're better than us.
It has to do with the Industrial Revolution.
So these folks were impacted by the Great Depression, which molded their children in regards to frugality. Is that how you pronounce that?
More like fragility.
Maybe it's a reference to frugal.
Frugalness. This group is also representative of the majority of soldiers in World War II. So the greatest generation, 1901 to 1927. We then have 1928 to 45, the silent generation. So everybody born between 1928 to 1945 were mute. We all know this. The baby boomer generation was 46 to 64.
Mm-hmm.
Generation X followed that, 65 to 80. Now, I'm going to get into that. There's a little bit of controversy around that. Then we have millennials, which would be us, 1981 to 96, followed by Gen Z, 96 to 2012. Also, a little bit of Gen Z there's some debate there on the name. Then we have 2013 to 2025, which is the current generation. And that is called Gen Alpha. Okay.
It's interesting because when I think of generations, I'm surprised that there's even a name for the generation that of people that are born now, because I would have thought, since I have no clue about any of this or how it works, I would have thought that the name actually comes, or maybe not the name, but the the period that we define a generation as
has to end before.
Well, that it's actually something that we don't know until after the fact.
That because, happens during that time.
Because you look back and you go, well, we see a divide in cultural norms with people born after this time because they've become influenced by far different things than people born before them.
Well, very good, Tay. And you might be onto something there. So according to this woman, Jean, I'm just going to read you her essay that she wrote about this. And we'll kind of interject as we go. So this is the thing that kind of surprised me. So no official commission or group decides what each generation is called and when it starts and when it ends. Instead, different names and birth year cutoffs are proposed, and through a somewhat haphazard process of consensus, slowly develops in the media and popular parlance. Mm. Because generations are often shaped by specific events, their labels and spans sometimes differ from one country to another. So what we're going to be talking about here is encapsulated in the generations according to the United States, which I think kind of like falls under, we would fall under that as well. I don't think Canada has any like, you know, Generation Trudeau or something.
I think we're influenced in a very similar...
It's Generation Liberal Cuck Trudeau, I believe is what...
it's interesting to think about that, like that idea that there's no official body that's determining what that is.
It's but like, literally pop culture.
But there must be like people who are actively thinking about this and like sort of...
This woman, Jean, is one of those people.
Okay.
So baby, let's talk about baby boomers, okay? So baby boomers are the most well-defined of the 20th century generations. They were named after the post-World War II spike in birth rate that began in 1946. So everybody came back from the war... started fucking like rabbits, and a bunch of babies were born baby boomers. The demographers, which are sociologists who study these types of trends, set the end of the boom in births at 64. So 46 to 1964, so making 46 to 64 the usual span for boomers.
And to Taylor's point, like they would have, those demographers would have looked back on that period and said, that's where that like the trend sort of end in that spike in booming. So like that's the end of that period.
Yeah. So now some argue that those born in the early 60s were actually too young to experience the counterculture of the 60s and early 70s and shouldn't really be considered boomers. So again, this is where we're getting into like people go, well, I don't think it's 46 to 64. I think it should be whatever.
I mean, I feel like that about Gen Z. When I hear 96 is considered Gen Z, right. I go, that seems too old to be Gen Z.
Right.
In the cultural context in which I see or think about Gen Z.
Those are the people who the true Gen Zers who are like born in like the height of that period of time, look at those people on the fringe and go, oh, you don't really get it though.
Right. Because I remember growing up in the 90s.
It's kind of like what I, like Maddie's born in 1995. And so like I look at like her experience and December of 95 and I'm like, well, you're not really a millennial, but also you're not really Gen Z. So like, how do you fit into that? Yeah.
So the post-boomer generation born in the 60s and 70s went unnamed until the 1990s. Kind of what you were sort of alluding to there, Tay. Some journalists proposed, okay, so here's one of the first names that came for this next generation. Some journalists proposed baby busters, which for some reason, I don't know why, but it just reminds me of this.
Little buff boys.
This is my favorite competition.
Poor troll boy. He just never can get a fucking break. So Baby Busters, it was a clunky and derivative moniker that unsurprisingly did not stick.
It sucked.
The label that did endure was Generation X. Taken from the title, so this is where Generation X came from. It came from a Douglas Copeland published novel in 1991. So Generation X, if you're not familiar, is basically, in the era of like Richard Linklater's movie Slacker and the grunge music scene of Pearl Jam and Nirvana, the vague and slightly cynical label seemed fitting. And so Gen X grabbed boomers' individualism and purified it, situating it squarely within the winner-take-all capitalism of the 1980s and embracing new opportunities for women and minorities. Generation X, the birth year of Generation X are debated, but settle somewhere around 65 to 80. So if you aren't familiar, do you guys get this reference? This is like the theme song for Generation X.
Is this Beastie Boys?
Nope. Do you want to see where this is from?
Yeah.
All right. This is Generation X's, opening entrance.
Big squad! Suck it!
Apparently we're going to be joined by X-Pac momentarily. Yeah. There he is. Oh, wait a minute. And there's Tori, that turns the bell.
Fuck yeah, guys.
Hell yeah.
For those of you who are just watching or just listening at home, that is the entrance music for X-Pac, WWE wrestler, WWF at the time.
I remember.
And Taylor got suspended for giving the suck it to one of his teachers.
It was a mistaken suck it. I'm not going to go into it. I didn't do it. He thought I did, and I fucking didn't. And I got suspended anyway because no one believed me. Troublemaker.
The funny part is Taylor's told this story, and it's a fucking great story. Personally, I don't believe you. I think you're a fucking liar.
I also
but
don't.
The story, the way that Taylor tells the story is that he did this, and I'm only gonna for the people just listening at home, you're not gonna see this.
So if
you want to see what Taylor says he did, it's this.
Well, I'll give you a little bit of context. Sure. A teacher of mine, yeah, who I was friends with.
You're the teacher. I'm you.
Who I was friends with. Hey, are you gonna be at practice later, Taylor? And
don't say it because you got to see it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now what I think happened was let's recreate what I actually think happened.
And are you going to be at practice later, Taylor? Dude, that's XXX, dude. That's XXX.
X-Pac!
Or XXX, sorry.
Guys,
it's X-Pac. XXX started doing it because X-Pac, XXX, and Kevin Nash joined.
Oh, okay. Oh, I mean, you know the lore. I'm not going to argue.
Attitude Era was the best era.
Jody posted reshared a reel yesterday that I saw. That was,
Carrington?
Yeah, did you see that?
Comes from somewhere. Podcast.
It was
produced by Snack Labs.
Teen boys are
which is us.
Are like teen boys are the worst gaslighters in the world. it was like this teacher who was not pretending to be a teen boy and he was like. He was like, you guys settle down over there. And then it cuts to him and he's like, oh man, we weren't even doing anything.
And the teacher's like, am I crazy?
Yeah.
Okay. So by the early 2000s, it was time to name the next generation of young people. The easy solution was following Gen X, Gen Y, because of course, Y comes after X. But just like baby busters, Gen Y didn't stick. Neil Howe and William Strauss, their 2000 book, Millennials Rising, named the generation born in the years following 1980 after the new century, and millennials was the label that endured. So that's why we are millennials.
I like what's interesting. Do you guys like it? I like the name millennials.
Yeah, sure. But it's interesting that Gen Y did survive in some ways because I was going, is Gen Y first of all, I thought maybe there was like an official body that names it. Obviously that's not true now that we know this, but I was like, maybe Gen Y is the official name, but it's just become popularly known as millennials.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I thought too. I like the idea of millennials because it makes me think of like the millennium, the turn of it makes me think of like Y2K.
Yeah.
And totally. I think a big part of that was the popularity of the internet and, that becoming sort of mainstream. And I think that is something that like has defined our generation, like growing up
and I think
how to use this tool. And like,
I feel like millennial works, but I feel like we should have been called the red pill generation.
Ooh, that's nice. I know. And I feel like the thing that you bring up with Maddie of her being born in 1995 and her being kind of in this like limbo between generations or feeling that way, or maybe us perceiving her that way, is because it's like if you weren't old enough to be like a really clearly defined switched on conscious being when the defining moment that ends up naming the generation like the turn of the millennium, Y2K, all the internet stuff, like we had already hit the ground running with all the things that sort of defined the turn of the millennium and the turn of the century.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas somebody like Maddie, who was 5 years old at the time, you know, she's still walking around like blabbing and, you know, making pretty much no sense of anything. And so it's like, that'd be a weird thing to define, to like put her in a box for. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like there should be this sort of like limbo phase between generations.
This is the opening. Brian doesn't get it. This is the opening music to the
Matrix. Movie called The Matrix.
Oh, wow.
That came out right around the, it was
1999.
Yeah. So the new generation was shaped by a cultural rise in self-focused individualism that fostered both its sense of entitlement and its embrace of equality. Millennials were also deeply affected by the Great Recession, which walloped their high expectations for their lives as and futures as they were starting their careers.
Huh, that's very interesting. Wait, what's the start of the
Millennial?
Is it 1990?
Of millennial? It is 1981 to 96. Oh,
okay, that makes sense. Because yeah. I was going, wow, the recession really didn't affect me that much. But I guess that speaks to how like wide-ranging a generation is. Like, I didn't feel... I was 18 when the recession happened.
I think we did, though. I mean, like you, I think maybe you did a good job at like navigating it.
You did via your family.
But think of like
my age.
Think of like the amount of our friends who didn't go to university. And in large part, probably because, you know, like our parents didn't have like money put aside for like us to go and just go to university, and it was going to be easy. Like if I wanted to go to university, I was going to have to work the entire time. And I like couldn't qualify for student loans.
You don't like to work.
But I think that there is that like knock on effect where like maybe it wasn't exactly in the moment when we were like entering the workforce. But at the same time, there was a big effect.
I feel like it's a big effect that at the time you wouldn't have necessarily said like, well, this is happening because of the recession. But it was like your family was probably, your parents were probably quite impacted by it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then obviously affects that affects you in terms of like whatever. I mean, you know, like exactly like you said, like maybe the money that was there to send you to university all of a sudden goes up in smoke. And then that, you know, alters the trajectory of your life.
It was all spent on the first computer. Gene goes on to say, like most people writing about generations, I initially assumed that the millennial era would continue until those born around 1999. But about 2011, I started to notice some very sudden shifts in the large national data sets I analyze, such as Monitoring the Future, a government-funded study administered by the University of Michigan that asks teens thousands of questions about their behavior, emotions, and drug and alcohol use. Members of this generation were the first to spend their entire adolescence with a smartphone. So Jean did not refer to them as Gen Z. She actually came up with the term...
Greenies.
iGen.
Oh.
In a nod to the iPhone, 3/4 of those people own, and define them as those born from 1995 to 2012. As with previous generations, it's taking a while to find a consensus here. Now, so according to her, she feels like iGen and Gen Z, like there isn't quite the sort of definitive decided generational name, but I believe Gen Z has kind of taken the lead.
It feels firmly
because I'm not familiar with iGen, but iGen's
kind of dumb.
I kind of like iGen.
I think it reminds me of when Apple was really naming everything I everything.
And
I just feel like it's like played out. Like
would agree with
if it became popular, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, that would make more sense.
But it's
sense
still
to me.
More. It's still more clearly defined. It has a. It has a more obvious nod to like what it means than Gen Z.
I think we should call them screenies.
So here's the Gen Z iGen. There was more kind of added or rather more options.
We're all screenies
suggested
now.
For this generation, and I think you guys are going to find this one funny. So some have used Gen Z for this group. I think most now are. I'm not sure when this was written. I should have looked at that. But others have argued that if millennials are no longer Gen Y, then Gen Z doesn't seem to fit, right? Because we were millennials, so Gen Z, it doesn't technically fit. Now, how the guy, one of the guys that came up with the millennials, Millennial Rising, one of the authors there, who helped name the millennials, has suggested that members of this group be called...
Little fuckers.
Be called homelanders.
That's awesome.
I'm smarter. I'm better. I am better.
after their upbringing in the same time of Homeland Security. However, I doubt that anyone will want to be named after the government agency that makes you take your shoes off at the airport. As I document in my recent book, iGen, this generation spends more time online and less time with friends in person. Given the links between screen time and unhappiness, that might also be why members of this group are less self-confident and less optimistic than millennials were as teens. They are also at the forefront of a mental health crisis, which rates of depression and anxiety soaring among teens and young adults. With the oldest members of iGen only 23, it may take some time for this group's moniker to firmly be established.
Dude, I don't know if I agree with that confidence thing. Man, like, have you seen kids fucking making TikToks in public? Like the
I don't think that's confidence. I think that's lack of awareness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that.
So lackeys could be a good term for them.
Yeah. Cringe, a generation cringe.
Dude, yeah. You know what's really interesting is I watched Big Think has been doing these kind of like medium length documentaries, like 40, 45 minute.
Did you watch the latest one on consciousness?
Yeah, I did.
Fucking awesome.
Yeah, it was great. Loved it. So the same guy from The Well, the like From The Well series.
Yeah.
Dispatches from the Well, I should say, on the Santa Fe Institute, which was, I can't remember when he said it was set up. I want to say the 80s, but it might've been like, maybe been more like the 60s or 70s, basically like an interdisciplinary institute for like all disciplines of science to basically come together and go, why does to try and get to like the heart of like really big questions, like why are we here, but not working in individual silos, but bringing everybody together and like not making departments or labs for certain disciplines, but just everybody is just like sloshed together, working together on bringing in, trying to figure out like this would be like a great piece to something at the Santa Fe Institute, like looking at the way that generations form and cultures change and like what are all the factors, the exogenous factors, mm-hmm. that are influencing how a generation becomes, mm-hmm. rooted in some type of definition, and it's very cool.
They should be called TikTokies.
Jean concludes her essay here. The generational names and spans may be squishy, but the evidence for generational differences is strong. Knowing what generation you are doesn't perfectly predict your attitudes and experiences, but it can tell you something about how the culture and events of the time mold what you believe, how you spend your time, and what you become. No matter what generation you are in, the shifting winds of culture and technology affect you for better, for worse, and almost always for both. Mm. I love that. I just loved reading that. Like I found it so fascinating, learned a lot, and really interesting to kind of look at that. So again, if it sticks, Generation Alpha, that's the generation right now. And the oldest people in this group would be about 9 years old this year. Now, whenever this was fucking put out, 2022. So
that's so 11
years old.
It's interesting just to think about, like,
how funny is it that following Generation Alpha is going to be
beta.
The fucking, I mean, Generation Trudeau. It should just be Generation Trudeau. Generation Beta. You know what I'm saying? Oh!
It is so interesting to think about Zaya and soon to be born second daughter, and like what will be the cultural influences that shape their generation.
Dude, like, think about how they'll grow up, and like when they are our ages,
man.
Gen Z will be like the older, wiser.
Yeah.
People.
God damn it. What a cringe. Let's move on to a very quick story.
Well, let me tell you something, brother.
Hogan has just hit the news. This is breaking. Breaking news coming from CTV, our competitor.
Another sex tape?
This was yesterday. No, it has nothing to do with the sex tape.
When did he have a sex tape?
That was a number of years back.
Oh, okay.
It was a big TMZ. But like bust.
Okay.
Retired wrestler Hulk Hogan and a friend rescued a teenage girl who was trapped in an overturned vehicle after a crash in Florida.
Holy shit. Did he fucking flip the vehicle back onto its tires?
No, actually, listen to this. So Hogan said on the social media platform X that he used a ballpoint pen to puncture the car's airbag and free the girl after witnessing the accident. He said in the X, The crazy part about the teenager that flipped her car was that without a knife to puncture the airbags to get her out, Indian Rocks Christian ballpoint pen came in really handy.
Really handy
to pot the bags. He's 70. He's over 70 years old. Thank you, God. All is well even now. Amen. Hulk Hogan. Ooh, yeah, brother. His new wife, yoga instructor Sky Daly, took to Facebook to praise the quick action taken by her 70-year-old husband.
Is this a TMZ article?
No, it's our competitor's article.
Oh, okay, right. CTV.
quote, by all appearances, she was unscathed, just really rattled, which is an absolute miracle, Daly wrote. So just throwing this out there, a pocket knife is so handy.
It is.
Opening boxes. I open a lot of boxes. Pocket knife, boom, all the time.
We should be Generation Amazon.
Yeah, dude. Right.
I can't remember what it was like. It was like
Generation Prime.
It was like Generation Prime. It was 19. It was Amazon 1999. We sell books online. Amazon 2024. Hello, fellow Prime citizen. Please return to your Prime dwelling for your Prime meal.
So good job, Hogan. Still out there making waves and just didn't change. Didn't change the haircut. Didn't change the mustache. Still looks.
Do you think
it's so interesting when people
do you think when
character.
He put the pen into the bag? Airbag and it popped. He went,
I'm going to get you, brother.
Hell yeah, bro.
I'm going to get you out of there, brother. Just 1 second, brother.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's move on to a very interesting piece of research. This blew my mind. I had no idea. So we're going to get into the world of
who sang this again? Who
Chumbawamba.
Chumbawamba.
Tub thumping.
This is all about piss.
What is tub thumping?
I have no idea.
I'm gonna have to bleep that out. I don't think you can say that.
You can't say tub thumping.
No, you definitely. I didn't have it ready. You can't say.
Oh shit!
So did you guys know this? Okay, so okay. We didn't know why our pee was yellow. We haven't known. We've never known.
I read that article
Isn't it urea? And when urea is diluted with. You drink a lot of water,
it's the exact same way as how we don't know why the ocean's blue.
We do know why. What?
No, we don't. Have you ever scooped up water in your hands?
Yeah, dude.
Or you could also say
the tides, right?
You had
the
me
tides.
For a second there. I was like, wait, what? Are you fucking serious?
We don't understand the tides. They come, they go. We can't explain it.
And magnets, dude. Don't even get us started on magnets.
I mean, we definitely don't know how they work.
Most people have never wondered how and why their urine became yellow, but scientists have been puzzling over it for more than a century, a number of generations. Back in the late 19th century,
not many
medical researchers identified urobilin as the chemical compound that gives pee its distinctive chartreuse hue. What they didn't know yellow chartreuse. There's also green chartreuse. I should say this. If your piss looks like green chartreuse,
it's like a vibrant yellow.
Go to the hospital. Mm. What they didn't know was how exactly the human body, or rather our resident colony of gut microbes, produce urobilin out of another compound called bilirubin.
Oh, like Billy Babies.
Which is a waste product from the death of red blood cells. So, okay, good. Bilirubin, do we know? We've talked about bilirubin before. Uh-huh. What's it linked to?
Aren't they blue?
Liver disease.
It's linked to a bunch of things, but jaundice would be like one thing.
I thought Billy Babies were blue for some reason. Can you Google that?
What
color is a Billy Baby?
Is a Billy Baby.
I would have said like yellow or greenish.
Yeah.
Billy babies are, well, let's go to images. Well, this Billy baby is blue, but it's under a blue light. So maybe that's where you're confused. Oh, shoot.
Maybe I've just looked at pictures of them.
Oh, Billy light. Wow, look at that. Billy, what's a fucking Billy light? Guys, let's do the Wikipedia game. A Billy light is a light therapy tool to treat newborn jaundice. So Billy babies are yellow, but they put them under blue, which turns them
green.
Hold on. What's the Wikipedia game? Is that like where you see how many links you have to follow before you get to Kevin Bacon's page?
It's very similar, actually. So do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
I've heard of it, but I can't remember.
This is completely not relevant to the podcast, but this is a fucking awesome game to play with friends. Very fun for like a you know, small social gathering of, it's like instead of playing Catan, you could play the Wikipedia game. So how it works is, let's say the three of us are going to play. So Brian,
I think we've played on a hang.
Oh yeah, we might have. Yeah, we might have. So Brian, you would have a laptop or a phone. Taylor, you would have a laptop or a phone, and I would give you, Brian, a random thing, like a random word, a thing, person, place, or thing, right? So it could be, let's say Billy Light. So I'll give you Billy Light. You would go to the Billy Light Wikipedia page. And then Taylor, I would give you the Cuban Missile Crisis. Okay. So you go to the Cuban Missile Crisis Wikipedia page. And then, so that's where you guys start. Now, I'm also going to give a third thing. So let's say it is, Lego. Let's say it's Hasbro. Okay. So the word Hasbro.
Not now, sponsored.
I already know I'm going to get there faster.
Have to use your page just simply clicking the hyperlinks
I would get
to
there
get
faster.
To Hasbro.
First I can person, do it in my mind. Do it in your mind really quick. Billy baby, baby, kid, child toys,
you would get there
child
faster.
Toys, Hasbro.
Yeah. What would you think is the first thing you would do to try to get to Hasbro?
Oh, I don't know. I just think that they're more closely related.
Dude, you had the Cuban Missile Crisis.
I think they're more related.
I already did mine in my head.
Spoken like a true capitalist. So anyway, let's get back to Chartreuse Hue P. So what they didn't know was how the human body turns the urobilin to bilirubin. Now, a study in the peer-reviewed journal Piss Nature.
What?
Yeah, it's called Piss Nature.
No, it's not.
Yeah. Claims to have identified the enzyme that produces urobilin. Piss Nature. That's a fucking... Let's look that up. Piss Nature. Piss Nature.
ChatGPT can't get everything right.
Oh, you know what's really funny is I put in piss... I put in Piss Nature. Guess what the first link was? Nature.com, Nature Journal. And it is the urine revolution, how recycling pee could help save whatever else is going to say. Okay. So it's in Nature Microbiology was the name of the actual journal.
Okay.
So named bilirubin reductase, the enzyme's discovery could help understand how gut microbes influence harmful conditions such as jaundice, gallstones, and inflammatory bowel disease. Quote, it is remarkable that an everyday biological phenomenon went unexplained for so long, and our team is excited to be able to explain it, said lead author and at University of Maryland professor Brantley Hall. Do you guys, when I was setting this up, I was looking for pee sound clips. And I got so many.
I'm sure you do.
You guys want to hear some?
Was it difficult to find ones labeled pee?
Not at all. It was, there were so many. I had to cut myself off.
Have you ever been dragged to the sidewalk and pee until you pissed blood?
Nick Cage, of course.
We don't have to.
I can't talk right now. I'm making piss.
I thought you were looking for sound effects of like pee going in a toilet and splashing.
That's what I was going to do, but then all this other shit came up and I was like, this is way better. So speaking to Healthline, Mr. Hall further explained, quote, unfortunately, gut microbes can be challenging to study. The gut is a low oxygen environment, and many of the bacteria in our guts can't survive if too much oxygen is present, making them difficult to grow and perform experiments in a lab. On top of that, it makes it much more challenging for humans like us or the classroom full of children in a school bus that is magic that can drive into that low oxygen environment because they cannot breathe. But he said recent advances in genetics allowed the scientists to compare the DNA of different microbe strains and identify the gene responsible for bilirubin reductase.
Pissing all by yourself, handsome?
In summary, we unraveled the fundamental aspect of how our gut microbiomes influence our daily lives, Mr. Hall concluded. Scientists have long known that the amount of urobilin, in a person's blood, and thus the color of their urine, is a crucial indicator of certain diseases.
The sound of your piss hitting the urinal?
Guys, wouldn't it be really funny if there was an episode of Magic School Bus where Miss Frizzle was like, all right, kids, let's get off the bus. She opens the door and she just goes, close the door. There's no oxygen.
Jaundice, for example, results from an overload of bilirubin in the body, sometimes because it's not being properly metabolized by the liver or other organs. The new study also found that newborn babies who are vulnerable to jaundice and people with inflammatory bowel disease have lower levels of bilirubin reductase, suggesting that its absence may contribute to such diseases.
Rest.
So much wrestling in this fucking episode.
Rest in piss. God. That's so funny.
That was one of my favorite ones.
That's gross, you guys.
So Mr. Hall now hopes that to test that idea through human studies, examining how our gut microbes production of the reductase influences the amount of bilirubin.
Does this sound overly complicated to you guys? I imagined that they could take the pee that is yellow and go, let's figure out how to divide this up and sort this out and figure out what's causing it to be yellow.
Jesus Christ, Brian, why weren't you present?
but in the lab. Right, that must be overly simplified,
yeah,
right?
I would guess.
You just can't do that, right? Right?
I mean, what? We really don't know.
You know, I would probably hazard to guess that they didn't start with the most complicated possible thing.
I wish.
And then go towards the simplest.
I wish the researchers were here right now and that we could just see them go, fuck, Jesus.
Brian,
that would have been so much easier.
Brian, an entire school bus of children and their teacher all died trying to figure this out.
Yeah. Lack of oxygen. Yeah,
they needed
it was comparable to the Titans submarine tragedy.
Can we also just Miss Frizzle? Can we also just appreciate and acknowledge that that woman not only was a fucking school teacher, but she had her like class 7 driver's license. She was driving a fucking bus too.
She's a great science communicator as well.
I don't know what the actual class license would be. Let's move on
I'm kind of stuck on this thing of if Honey, I Shrunk the Kids was real and you could shrink those kids down and there was this small bus that could go inside you, would you really not be able to breathe inside the human body? Like, would there be no oxygen for those little tiny kids to breathe
in the gut? There would be.
I suppose you could maybe.
But there's probably, I bet you in the lungs, there's a bunch of it.
Who knows? Maybe you just don't.
Maybe if you're smaller, do you need less oxygen?
Or if you have gills that can breathe blood, there's probably lots of oxygen there.
Mm.
Right?
Well, that's an interesting question.
Yeah.
Do you need less oxygen if you're smaller?
Can you ask?
And not like miniature, like Magic School Bus smaller, but like if you're just a child.
What about?
I suppose your body must need less oxygen because you don't have as much muscle tone. Your oxygen dependency is based on bigger people need more oxygen.
Okay, wait.
That's why heavyweights have a really tough time going 5 rounds.
If you were micro-sized, could you breathe inside human body?
I hate this so much.
If you're micro-sized, is that what you said?
Yeah, breathing at a micro-size inside a human body would be scientifically implausible for several reasons. Oh, actually, this is really interesting. One, oxygen molecule sizes. At a micro size, oxygen molecules would be relatively huge compared to your lung
hair
size.
Right, you have to be like eating them like a donut.
This disparity in size can make the process of gas exchange through lung tissue, inefficient or impossible.
Oh, man, that actually just made me sad.
There's lots of other things. Airway navigation, immune response, atmospheric conditions. Yeah, there's a lot of things that would be bad. The temperature, humidity, and other factors inside the human body are not conducive to the kind of breathing we would do in the open air.
Oh, there you go. The more you know. Well, yeah. So let's move on to a very fun history lesson.
Didn't we already have a history lesson?
No.
Okay.
No. That wasn't the history lesson. This is.
Guys, why is the History Channel called the History Channel?
They really went off the deep end.
Because they're really laying the groundwork for the history of the future.
Although they are behind Ancient Aliens and
great series.
Good on them for that.
And the Alaskan Gold Rush.
And whatever show you did for them.
I didn't do a History Channel show. Oh no, you're right. I did a History Channel movie. It was a movie.
I knew that.
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
He was in a tank.
It was. Yeah. I got to drive an actual D.D. Sherman tank.
What the fuck?
And shoot a fucking shoot like a World War II machine gun.
I feel like I never knew that. Also, Mr. Beast has been firing a lot of tank bullets lately on his channel.
Yeah,
he's gearing up.
There's a lot of CGI in those videos, eh?
There is, but not astounding. So much like for.
I mean, he does do some wild shit, but there's also some wild CGI where you're like, why did you do that? Just there drive is, the bus into the pit. Like, I don't need to see the fucking bus fake explode, you ding dong. Give me $1 million. Okay.
But, I can tell you that 9-year-olds really love that.
Antimony. Do you guys know what antimony is?
I've heard the word before, but I can't recall what it means.
Well, it is the sister of alimony. Antimony is it's an element. So antimony pills. This is something that. So oh right. The reason why I thought this would be interesting to talk about, Brian, you missed this, but you and I did a duo episode when Brian was on Christmas vacation, where he took a full month off work. And we talked about that new pill that I think it was MIT created. That was an alternative to like Ozempic.
Yeah, right.
So it was like a diet pill or like a weight loss pill.
And it vibrated.
And the pill is actually just a little machine with an engine in it, and it vibrates.
No way.
You swallow it. It sits in your belly. It vibrates. It tricks your body into thinking that it's actually full. You then poop the pill out, and then I'm guessing wash it off and swallow it again. I don't know.
No.
Oh, I thought it actually broke up fat molecules.
No. It literally just vibrated in your belly.
Oh, okay.
And which gave you the sensation that you are fuller than you are.
Oh, okay.
It's like drinking a full glass of water before a meal to like reduce the need to fill.
Right, right.
So the antimony pill was sort of like the like 19th century version of the robotic pill.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Now I recall.
Yeah.
Because I said this to you yesterday.
An antimony pill is a pill made from metallic antimony. It was a very popular remedy in the 19th century to purge and revitalize the bowels. In use, it is swallowed, allowed to pass through the body, after which it is customarily recovered from the doo-doo for reuse, giving rise to the name the everlasting pill. There's also something referred to as the antimonial cup, which yielded a very similar effect. So I have a little sort of excerpt from a 1907 book called According to the Medico-Pharmaceutical Critic and Guide.
Dude.
Edited by William J. Robinson, that I'm going to read to you, that is referring to these antimony pills.
That would be the coolest thing ever to see on like speaking of like the History Channel, like an episode of like Pawn Stars, where this like guy comes into the pawn shop to have this like thing appraised, and it's like this old cup with this like old pill-shaped thing
is
from like way back in the day. And he's like, what is this thing?
Oh,
like,
dude.
Where did this come from?
You have no idea. Let me get there. That would be fucking crazy. Okay. So I'll read this little piece from the 1907, is this a book? I don't know. According to the Medico-Pharmaceutical Critic and Guide. Okay. By William J. Robinson. 5. Okay, here we go. We have referenced in the past of the economy, which used to be practiced by our forefathers. Thus, for instance, it was customary to use leeches over and over again, and there are instances of infection with syphilis by leeches that had been previously used on luetic patients. But we believe that the everlasting cathartic pill beats everything in the line of economy. This pill was a little bullet composed of a metallic antimony, which had or was believed to have the property of purging as often as it was swallowed. It is not inconceivable that it might have had such property, for it is possible that a minute amount was dissolved by the gastrointestinal juices, and this amount, plus the suggestion, was sufficient to produce cathartic action. Then again, the everlasting pill probably aided peristalsis. Peristalsis, which, if you are not familiar with peristalsis, it is the action of your belly moving things through the gut, which eventually leads to pooping. Where was I? Yes. Peristalsis. Where is that? There we go. By its mechanical weight and motion. Okay, this bullet was passed out, aka shit out, recovered from the feces, or the shit, and used over and over again. This, as Dr. J.A. Paris says, was economy in right earnest, for a single pill could serve a whole family during their lives and might be transmitted as an heirloom to posterity.
No.
So he used the word in there.
Heirloom.
No.
Which I'm sure that this was fine because I know that, like, I know that hygiene standards back in like the early 1900s were a bit different. They were higher than they are today.
You mean they had like better cleaning products and things like that? So they really were getting all the bacteria.
Yeah, because all the natural green people weren't alive yet. So they weren't there to ruin it for everybody.
So so he used the word cathartic. And in medicine, cathartic is like it's basically a form of laxative. So I had mentioned the antimonial, the antimony pill, which that was used to make you shit. Now there's the antimonial cup, okay? Now the antimonial cup was a small half-pint mug or cup cast in antimony, popular in Europe during the 17th and 18th centuries. They were also known under the names pocula emetica or calluses vomitori or emetic cups. And as wine was kept in these cups for a 24-hour period, it gave the wine an emetic or laxative quality. Tartaric acid in the wine acted upon the metal cup and formed what's called tartarized antimony. And this is something that makes you throw up.
Okay, so these cups were used to pour wine into, which basically took some of the antimony from the cup.
That's right.
And then put it into the wine so that when you drank the wine, then you would have that effect it that was the like pill was giving
18th
you.
Century epicac, okay?
Right.
So here's an image. This is like modern day. The modern day epicac would make this modern man in sandals do what he's doing, which he's vomiting. Okay. That's that guy there, right?
Jesus.
Okay. So now the antimony cup back in the day would be we would see this. Okay. So we can see here that there is a couple of women standing for people just listening. There's a couple of women. This is a painting from actually the 8th century.
This looks much more civilized.
Showing a
although still sandals.
It's not much has changed since the 700s. So this is a guy from the 8th century puking, and you can see that his maid or his wife. Actually, I think the maid is in the back going, "You got it," and then the wife is holding his head going, "You got it, baby, you got it." And he's. So antimonial cups. So here's your Pawn Stars or your like. The Great Antique Roadshow.
Yeah.
Antimonial cups are extremely rare. So rare that there's only 6 known in Great Britain.
No.
All of them are in London.
I got 2 in my attic.
2 are in the Netherlands, Amsterdam and Leiden. One is in Switzerland. One is in Italy. And another one that is in London specifically is believed to have belonged to Captain James Cook, who is an ancient English navigator. And it is in the National Maritime Museum at Greenwich. Now, the reason that he had an antimonial cup is mostly of speculation. Anything from stomach problems to scurvy. Now, personally, I think it's just as likely that he had emetophilia, which emetophilia, also known as Roman shower, is the sexual arousal from vomiting, being vomited on, or watching others vomit.
Yeah, it's called Roman shower. Like that's a. Oh, I'm
fucking coming.
Jesus. That was my impression of
oh my god,
Captain James Cook.
Do you have a picture of these cups? I'm wondering,
so,
like,
yeah,
are they ornate or are they whatever?
So this is actually the cup that Captain James Cook had for his emetophilia. You can see it right here, and when he would drink from this cup,
I'm
fucking coming.
That's what he would do. That's what
it's so it's like gold with a bit of like gold trim and like an. Sort of,
it's kind
I don't
of
know,
cute
what is
cup.
That, I mean, what is that nice sort cup. Of like emblem-y looking?
I don't think it's gold. I think that's the lighting. I think it's silver.
Gold
silver, silver in color.
In this. Yeah, it might be silver. It's, well, fuck, dude. This is like the dress. Like, is it?
Right. Looks gold to me, but I don't know. I don't know where you're seeing
it's,
silver. But
it's gold colored in the image that we're looking at, but it could be lighting that is reflected off of silver, but it looks pretty gold.
Looks gold. Looks gold on my laptop too, so I don't know. Anyway, so yeah, that's the antimonial pill, antimony pill and the antimonial cup.
Well, that is super gross.
And
that's,
super
that gross
concludes
that.
This edition of the History Channel, brought to you by Sick Boy Podcast.
It really is, man, it's so interesting. Like that, everything like that just makes me think, like, what are the things that in 100, 150 years,
we're going to be
there's
saying
gonna
the
be
same thing. But
three ding dongs sitting around going, can you fucking believe in the 2020s, they were doing
the COVID vaccine?
They thought vaccines worked.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck. I mean, as funny as insane as that seems, it's like, who knows? I mean, fuck, who knows?
But I think the difference, though, is that, and like, yeah, I agree with you. I think that we will do that. Eventually that will happen.
Because they
sure.
were sitting around with the antimony cup being like, this is it.
Well, there's a difference between like it. Knowing, like having pretty conclusive science on something. And like, and I guess in even in saying that, like the science changes.
Science is always wrong.
But
look at eggs. look at eggs. I mean, no, I mean that. Science is always wrong.
Yeah. It's always
eggs.
It's always being improved upon and
you know.
Wait, what about eggs?
Oh, you don't know the whole history of fucking eggs?
Oh, it's like one.
Dude, egg white's bad. Like,
yeah.
Egg
yeah.
yellow's yeah. good. Egg. Yeah. Egg yellow's good.
The debate on whether eggs are good for you or bad for you is like. It's like the urine thing. It's like, man, didn't we settle this? Like, no.
The thing though is like that is worth. Saying at this point is that there is better science, and so therefore we have a better understanding of how some of these things work because we understand scientifically.
I agree with you,
happening.
But in 150 years, they might look at the science we're doing now and go, "Those dummies had no idea."
Yeah. In 100 years, they're gonna go, "They should have listened to Grush." All right, folks, let's wrap this up. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for the support. To the folks that come over to YouTube and leave comments. We love seeing that. Actually, Chelsea on YouTube actually answered the question that I had that was still rubbing me the wrong way for days and days after. I was trying to come up with the term of the one-sided relationship that people tend to have with things like celebrities or podcast hosts. Mm. And it is parasocial relationship. That's the word I was looking for there. Mm. And a lot of people have parasocial relationships with us. Because we're in their ears so many times a week, and they get to know us through our, you know, through the podcast and personally know us.
That's right.
Right here.
Like the nurse at the QE2 who was like, it would be sweet if you could get a catheter in for the show.
Yeah. Right.
Like.
Yeah.
She thought that was a totally cool thing to say.
And you let us all.
Which it was. I thought
let us
funny,
all down.
It was. Yeah.
So thanks for the support there. Thanks for the comments. Thanks for the people who watch on YouTube. And if you want to watch, just come check it out. It's fun. I mean, this is the only episode of the three episodes a week that we actually put on YouTube. And we'd love to have you over there. And if you want to support the podcast further, come on over to our Discord. It's constantly growing, a beautiful community of folks who are chiming in every single week with episode discussions, sharing their own personal stories, uploading super fucked up graphic photos of their health shit. You know, if you want to see someone's pants full of blood because the blood came out of their poopy hole, you can do that at our Discord. And the Discord link is in the show notes. So come on over. And of course, as always, rate and review the podcast wherever you can do that, because that does make a difference and it means the world to us.
And if you want to be a guest on the show, go to sickboypodcast.com, fill out the form.
And thanks as always to the folks who helped make this show happen. Shout out to our production assistant, Annika, to our manager, Jeff.
Who actually sent me the antimony thing.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jeff. You could have done that more easily and not had to send that to Taylor if you were in our Discord. So Jeff, maybe hop on Discord. Thanks to Donovan, to Rich, to all the other people who help with this show, not just on our Friday episodes, but on our Monday and Wednesday ones too. We love you all, and we couldn't do this without you.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy, and this is Sick Boy.
And she finishes the thing and it's like going to credits, and she has her laptop and she takes her laptop. And
for more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.